inviting me.
We also have with us for the remainder of the hour, Lucy Barber here in the studio, author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition, Dr. Farouk Elbaz, who's the director of the Center for Remote Sensing at Boston University, and staying with us as well is Gregory Sir, deputy chief of the San Francisco Police Department. We have your calls on the line, and we'll be getting to those as soon as we take a little break here on Friday Forum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Angie Coiro.
I only saw a small blip on the news last night. It was almost a traffic report that there might be some traffic on Market Street. And I thought, well, it's more than a little traffic block. It's a huge political protest.
Lucy Barber, it's about, in a sense, it's about creating that traffic block so that you get on the news.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things here, that numbers are important, but it's also just about creating an event that captures people's imagination so that they show up, and then that also captures the people's imagination so that there's something to cover, which is why, in addition to numbers, you also want to have interesting signs. Be nice if we had some more compelling speakers at most of these rallies, but people do as well as they can, given the tendency to limit them to 2 minutes instead of the 10 minutes that people had in 1963. So it's a trick to figure out how to get a dramatic, interesting demonstration and then to get the media coverage that you want afterwards.
Let's take some of your calls. We're going to start with John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm calling about Saturday's march. And it, as one who attends all the large events in San Francisco, when there were 300,000 people estimated to be at Halloween in the Castro, and as more than that at Gay Pride Day, the crowds are obviously stationary. However, at this one, as I walked down Market Street, there were vast numbers of people walking out of the area up Market Street, just crowds and tons of people on the sidewalks, and that continued the whole day. As people flowed onto Civic Center Plaza up Market Street, they filled Civic Center and then flowed away in equal amounts in all directions. One had only to go down the escalator to BART, as I did at one point, thinking so cleverly in my mind that I would just hop on BART and go to Montgomery Street. Well, when I went down from the Civic Center Plaza, I got caught with thousands of people in that one-block-long concourse and got stuck. It was just shoulder-to-shoulder all the way from the turnstile to the base of the escalator. So I just turned around and went right back up. And there was no way to count people underground, no way to count people flocking to 16th and Mission Street. The people in cars, there were people carrying signs who were stuck in traffic, unlike most events where people come and they stay there. It seems to me that there were more than what the organizers estimated, at least 150,000, having gone up to the library and looked down at the crowd and down Market Street and zipped all over as much as possible to see the furthest reaches of the crowd. There were tons of people, unlike any crowd I've ever seen in San Francisco in the 15 years I've lived here.
John, thanks for sharing your impressions on that. And that prompts me to ask Dr. Farouk Elbaz, understandably, there are people who are dropping out of the counting business, at least publicly, as we've already covered, the National Park Service is not going to go public with its numbers anymore. But for those agencies that are going to stay in the business of counting crowds, will they pay heed to, for example, what John saw? You have to count the underground. You have to count the side streets. You have to get transit numbers and throw them all into the pot and cook them up.
Yeah, there are certainly ways to do all of that together. But in some ways, the political impact means that one has to figure out a specific time where we can call it the peak time of the event, whatever that event might be, whether it's a celebration or a political strategy. And it is possible to count people at a given time, at a given space, very accurately, but you cannot possibly say the total number of people that came to this place during this day was XX. Mm-hmm. Because you need whatever you count, you must be able to make that into a unit of time and space. Mm-hmm. And like this gentleman that said there were tons of people. Yeah, what is tons of people at a given time? And they're moving from this place to that place. Yeah, are they the same people or are different people? So you really cannot perceive of the total number, unless you want to take a specific time and a specific place.
Let's talk to Michael, who's calling from... Oh, let me get a comment first from Lucy Barber.
One thing I think maybe make it a different challenge in San Francisco than from Washington, D.C., is that in Washington, you can do a little bit more with the crunching of the numbers on transit and also on bus transportation. Here, it felt like, from my friends and everyone that came down, that the people were coming in so many different forms of transportation to get to the Bay Area. You know, they're staying in friends, they're getting with friends, they're getting on the BART, some are taking the organized buses, others are living in the city and coming for it, so it would be hard to get that kind of count. In Washington, it does tend to be more of this outsider march in, and so in some cases, they've done really good numbers by counting the number of people that come on buses. They did this in 1963, for example, the number of trains, and then doing some, you know, extrapolations from the number of cars because they parked them in a specific area. And so that can help because they're sort of, the new method in Washington is to have everybody park in the suburban metro parking lots, and including the buses, and then they go in and then they can do counts on what's the difference between the metro ridership on that day than what you would have on a normal Saturday or on a normal Sunday. And that can it can give you another style of what the caller was interested in terms of getting the people moving in and out of the city. It feels to me like it would be harder to do that in San Francisco.
Let's take a call from Michael in San Francisco. Hi, Michael. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment and then a question. The comment has to do with the nature of these demonstrations as being somewhat anti-democratic in that they have been traditionally used. No wonder they started in the United States in the 30s. It was the period of the rise of fascism and communism in the world, and both these kind of fringe political parties oftentimes saw mass demonstrations as a way of undermining the governments that they were opposed to. But my question goes to more, who pays for the liability, both for the damage that is often caused in these mass demonstrations or just for the cost of policing them? Everyone else in society who wants to use public space is expected to pay for the additional cost to the public for use of those spaces. Do we have a mechanism whereby, at a mass demonstrations, if people begin to destroy private property, the people who organize the demonstrations have a bond or an insurance policy to cover all these damages?
Let's take that in two parts. We're going to take the last part first and go to Gregory Sir on that.
Well, obviously, the mechanism by which we recover cost of damage, that's criminal conduct. There were arrests made on Saturday, and they are totaling up the bills for the damage to
that
the...
never works.
Well, I'm just answering the question.
Right.
Never works.
As far as the organizers, San Francisco is self-indemnified, so we pretty much pay our own bills. And as far as the police resources and other city agency resources dedicated to any spontaneous event, especially with regard to First Amendment type demonstrations, the city has enough resources out there to keep the public safe and to clean it up afterwards, and it just goes in general policing. And because of the current economic situation really across the whole country, we try to do it as much as we can with on-duty officers to keep the overtime costs down.
Lucy Barber, Michael's portrayal of history there, does that resonate with you?
I think there's definitely a sense in which the age of the 1930s was the age of where you started to have larger and larger demonstrations. I'm not sure I'd tie it so closely to just fascism. I think it's also a nature of the changes in technology and travel. It's the same period in which you start to have huge conventions for traditional Republican parties. They start to change from just Republican or Democratic parties. Their conventions start getting to be bigger, more like celebrations rather than a small gathering of the political insiders. It's also the age when tourism starts to go much bigger and you start to have more of these big festival events in different locations. So it's not so much, my comment wasn't that demonstrations started in the 1930s. Demonstrations had been going on for years, but the kind of new change from especially for national ones, from a focus on the number of spectators to the number of participants is part of this whole sense of large demonstrations becoming more possible in faraway areas. I mean, the size of demonstrations in the local stage in New York City, they had huge parades in the 19th century. They've had huge parades in England and, you know, before America was formed. And some of those were political, too. So,
and they all had a price tag.
And they all had a price tag. And sometimes people try to make... sometimes when people really hated marches in Washington, they tried to make them pay for it. But the First Amendment clearly makes that illegal.
Let's go to Craig in Redwood City. Hi, Craig. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I had two questions for Dr. Farouk Elbaz. One is he the same Farouk Elbaz that trained the Apollo astronauts in geology? The second question is, was he or has he been able to do controlled experiments to calibrate his photo technique, let's say by taking 50,000 people and putting them out on the mall and then photographing them?
Very good questions. The answer to the first one is yes. And actually, the first counting I did was to count craters on the surface of the moon to figure out the relative age of spaces on the moon when we were selecting landing sites for the Apollo astronauts. If there are very many craters, then it's an old surface. Fewer craters, it's a younger surface.
Okay, thank
you. So that was the technique, yes. And yes, there is a need to do experimentations of controlled about how many people can you put in a small area. But when I did mine, since I did not have it, I actually made my own experiment by calling up my graduate students saying, I want to show you something. I actually put a square meter mark of clear material on the floor near a wall where I had some maps, and I called my graduate student to show them something, and I was trying to just behave as if I was showing some map, and they said nobody moves, and they looked at that one square meter to see if people can come close to see something out there, how many people can be in there, and they found that there's at least 6 people per square meter when they are densely packed. And we looked at the pictures taken by the National Park Service of people that were near the very large screens. They have the screens that show the speakers, and they were very densely packed. And I took this number as the maximum number in the very closely packed area, very close to the screens. And from there on, we had less few people, and that's how we did our count.
I see. That's very interesting. Thank you very much.
And thank you for that, Craig. We're going to go to an email from Jim, who says, my concern after the march was not the actual number of marchers, but how the number was reported in the national media versus local media. National media reported a few thousand, even 25,000 on one station. Local media put the number 3 times higher at up to 80,000. If both media outlets are to be trusted, how can those 2 reported numbers be so different? I'm going to go to Gregory Sir on that in just a moment. Just to let you know, Jim, I had actually heard, this is, I suppose you can call this just word of mouth, but having talked to someone who had a discussion with a New York Times stringer, and apparently one of the issues is how quickly they need to get that information in order to beat the clock, in order to get to press. They sometimes have to get the crowd estimates before the crowd has fully gathered, and undoubtedly relying, Gregory Sir, on much the same things you are, which are projections by the people who are organizing and by the people who are patrolling the crowds.
Well, I think the projections to which the Capitol CHP officer spoke to, those are crowd estimates that they put down weeks before when they put it on their permit, when they're requesting the space, and then they say how many people they expect. That number is almost always either under or overestimated, and very rarely even close to the ballpark of what the people are going to get. I think that what's important for both local, national media, even organizers, probably the truest estimate, and even though it might not be as accurate as the doctor's scientific methodology, is going to be from the event commander or the command post. At every single major demonstration or festival or any large assembly that's got a significant police presence, there will be an event commander. He will, at the very least, be a captain and oftentimes a commander or a deputy chief. And that person is ultimately responsible for the goings-on of the whole event, whether it be the march or the assembly. And I think that you can at least rely on the fact that that's going to be consistent. What happens a lot at these different demonstrations is as the media moves along, they'll ask some officer standing on a street corner, hey, how many people do you think this is? And the officer is not being deceptive. He or she will just give the estimate of what they think based on the fact of what's passed by that particular corner. And it'll be an honest estimate, but will it be anywhere near as accurate as what the command post might have, having gotten reports from various quadrants or sectors, and at the same time maybe having had an aerial view or at least an elevated view from the command post? If I could go back to what John asked that question too about subways and things. We're speaking of crowd estimates, not a census of the crowd. So you can't really get, if they're underground and they're out of sight, you can get a feeling. And he spoke to Halloween. I've been at Halloween the last 8 Halloweens. Halloween is a very static crowd. It does come, it does stay, and everybody is very, very, very close. You can't even walk through the crowd on Halloween. You could walk through this crowd on Saturday. In fact, much of the crowd was walking itself.
Let me ask you one more question before we go back to the phones, Gregory, sir, and that's with a number of agencies throwing up their hands and saying, you know what, we're just not going to release numbers anymore. The people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, the people who show up for the National Park Service, it just gets a horrible mess when you release it to the media, and we're just not going to give numbers anymore. Why hasn't the PD gone in that direction?
Well, I think people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, thank God, is a much lower number than the numbers we're talking about, and you can be very accurate with regard to that. We will always give crowd estimates. I think a lot of the time, the people that go to tremendous efforts to put these things together, whether it's this, whether it's Chinese New Year's, whether it's Halloween, it sets the stage for the next march. It is, I think, rewarding for the organizers on Saturday to know that they threw an event that drew the most people in this highly charged environment that we have right now. This march that happened on Saturday was far greater than any march we had with regard to the Gulf War, and that was actually when the fighting was going on. And this is before anything has happened in that regard.
Let's talk to Mary Louise, who's holding in Palo Alto. Mary Louise, thank you for waiting.
You know, thank you. I was almost ready to put my phone on because I feel like some of what I called about has already, in a way, been dealt with. But one of the questions I have is, it seems that through our government there are ways that they can take pictures that are extremely accurate from very far away. And so I had this feeling that if it was really wanted to have an idea of the number, that it could be calculated with help of photographs, even from whether it be planes or perhaps satellites coming by, or, you know, I know they're not spinning around constantly in the air everywhere, but I just feel like if it was really necessary, they should be able to take pictures and then calculate. So that's one of the things I wanted to say. And also, I've been a peace activist since I came to this country in 1963, and I have not been to any where it was as completely packed with people. Many places we were not able to move at all, and then it would let up after some time. But many times we stood still for 20 minutes, half an hour or so, could not even move. And then on the side streets, more people were coming in, more people were coming in. So I just wanted to say that I really felt like I'd never seen such a large crowd for a peace march, and I would have guessed at least 220,000 people or so there.
Mary Louise, thank you for that. Farouk Elbaz, it comes down with the methods that Marie Louise was suggesting up front. As you mentioned, it comes down to who's going to pay for that.
Yes, although she brings up a very important point there. First, yes, spy satellites that are owned by the government can get photographs at a given time. That would help in this, but they would not do that because they cannot tell us how clear are these photographs. They will not divulge the fact that the photographs exist, number one, or how good they are. So that would not work. However, there are parts of the U.S. government, like NASA, that actually own aircrafts and own very good photography equipment that is used in testing for satellite missions that could be assigned to do these jobs if, as the thoughtful lady mentioned, if the government is very interested in helping in this regard. And I personally believe that we should. Some agency of the U.S. government should be able to take this on because it is important for people to know what, how many people went to this thing, whether it is politically or for the safety of the citizenry or whatever the reason is. This, it is important to get numbers, and it is possible to take, say, one NASA aircraft, ask it to go over once or twice over a given one of all of the large demonstrations or groupings of people, and have somebody within the U.S. government to do that, and then that somebody can issue these numbers to say that at that given place and the given time there were so many people without any discussion, with plus or minus 2% error or 5% error, mm-hmm. and that could resolve the whole issue.
Lucy Barber?
I guess I'm more ambivalent about whether or not we really want the government to take this task on. Partly, my attitude is that in some cases, maybe not when it's the Chinese New Year, but when it's a protest against the federal government, that sort of turns you into having to be really, the organizers have to then have such a close dependent relationship on the same people that they're protesting against. And I think to want that too hard puts you in a very sort of complicit position. And also, I wonder about, I know that in Washington, where they've been watching these demonstrations for years, the media have themselves developed better techniques for counting so that they're able to do a pretty good job of interpreting between the counts you might get from the authorities for a fixed time and the organizers' estimates, and that if media across the country didn't just depend on what a police officer said on the corner from an impression, but carefully developed their own methods and got reports and listened to different people's impressions, we would get good enough numbers. And also, do we want our politics about these demonstrations to get reduced just to crowd counts? These demonstrations aren't just about how many people show up. That's incredibly important. But they're also about the message of the people. They're about the coalition that gets formed on it, the ability of people to come together peacefully, if that's the goal of the demonstration. There's so many more things besides just the turnout. And I would sort of get worried that if we had an agency doing it, that would continue to devolve the politics down to just what I've always called the numbers game. And it's not that it isn't important, but it isn't the only thing at stake.
Danny in Berkeley. Was that Gregory, sir? Or did I hear Farouk Elbaz in there?
No, I was actually going to say that I thought about that myself, and I would make this as a second alternative if the government is not going to step in, and because we think that government can be clean without having to take sides. A company can do that for the media, because if the media were able to do that job, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But the media has not been able to do it. So maybe the media can get a company to do this, and they will pay for the services so that they can do that. And I'm not really thinking about it only from in terms of the
for 24 years, and while I was there, and what they still do, they do Day in the Greens and Shoreline Amphitheater, and we always knew exactly how many people were at an event. And I'm just talking about the numbers. I'm not talking about the merits of the event, which I think are very meritorious. But for us, we could look at a crowd at Shoreline Amphitheater or at a Day in the Green. We knew exactly how many people could fit on the infield of the stadium or in the lawn of Shoreline, and we'd know it. It always surprised us that we would hear these reports of demonstrations that we knew were just totally exaggerated one way or another. And it often seemed to us that sometimes the police would say at a public demonstration, if there were a 50 or they would say there were 50 or 100,000 people without incident. And we knew just by walking around and just by looking at the crowd, or you know how big it may be, how many people more or less were there, based on us knowing how many people come to events every day. You just kind of learn this after a while, and when you sell millions of tickets like we did, you get to know what a crowd size is.
You do have the advantage, Danny, of having people in a contained area, though. If you put them in the shoreline or you put them in an auditorium, nobody's moving so much in and out as they would at a huge demonstration.
Well, that's true, but you also know how hard it is to move among the people. And you know how many square feet it is, and we look at an area and say, well, this is twice the size of the lawn of shoreline, or three times the size, or this is about the size of the infield of the Oakland Stadium, and we knew how many people we could fit on the field. Not the seats, just the field. And you get an idea of how crowded things are and how hard it is to walk through a group of people. And we say, we would know how many people were in the stadium, and we'd know how hard it is to walk through the crowd. And the farther you get away from the stage or the podium, wherever, whatever the case may be, the easier it is to walk. You just kind of get a feel.
And in fact, that goes to the question of density that Farouk Elbaz brought up earlier, too, is that that's going to fluctuate from one piece to the other. Danny, thanks for the insight on that. I have an email for you, Gregory, sir. This is from Andrew in Oakland, who says, how do you know the capacity of a certain public space? If Civic Center is said to hold 40 to 45,000 people, where does that number come from?
Those numbers are provided by pretty much folks like the doctor who do a per square foot or a per cubic foot or that'd be a meter, I guess, figuring out exactly what could fit in there. Those are those. In fact, it's funny going to Danny's question. You know, like Candlestick Park, the infield at Candlestick Park we know holds 20,000 people. So that's what he's speaking of. I got a little nostalgic there when he spoke about Days on the Green. We haven't had those since the late 70s. But the numbers, and I think you hit the nail on the head that Bill Graham goes by, those are the same numbers that I'm giving you. We know Candlestick Park holds 20,000. We know the Candlestick Park parking lot holds 100,000. We know, like I said, Civic Center holds 40 to 43,000, depending on what you're talking about. But then you have to take into account that's just the square proper. Once you get the street closure and there's people in the streets, then the number grows from there.
We're going to have to let that be their last remark because we're coming to the close of the hour. I want to thank everyone who participated. We were joined earlier by David Brunell, Public Affairs Officer for the Office of Capital Protection with the California Highway Patrol. Gregory Sir has been with us throughout the hour, Deputy Chief of the San Francisco Police Department. Dr. Farouk Elbaz has been on the line from the Center for Remote Sensing in Boston University. He directs that organization. And Lucy Barber here in the studio, the author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition. That's newly released. She's an archivist with the California State Archives in Sacramento. We've got another hour of form to come, so stick around here on KQED-FM. I'm Angie Coiro.